from Turkey, and there's also quite a lot coming up on AM and in the news. Of course, the Queensland election is really at the end now. People coming to going to the polls tomorrow. News time, 7 o'clock.
ABC News. Good morning, I'm Simon Lauder. The United Nations has warned the world is on course for what it calls catastrophic climate change. The UN says if only current climate policies are implemented, world temperatures could warm by up to 3.1 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels by the end of this century. Inga Anderson from the UN Environment Programme says without swift and dramatic carbon emission cuts, the Paris Agreement goal of limiting global warming to 1.5 degrees will soon be dead. She says countries can deliver the cuts needed.
By investing heavily in solar and wind energy, in forests, in reforming buildings, transport and industry sectors and more, all backed by a whole-of-government approach, a new financial global architecture and strong private sector action.
Health authorities in Gaza say an Israeli airstrike has hit a former school, killing at least 17 people, including children. Middle East correspondent Matthew Doran reports.
The latest strike by the Israeli Defence Forces hit Nusayrat in central Gaza, a camp where many Palestinians who've lost their homes and have had to seek refuge were sheltering. The IDF saying the former school compound housed a Hamas command centre, insisting it took steps to limit harm to civilians. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas has told a summit in Russia there must be a UN-led ceasefire deal in Gaza, with the Palestinian people having suffered greatly during the more than a year-long war. The United States has announced more than $200 million in aid for Gaza and the West Bank as fighting continues. Matthew Doran, ABC News, Jerusalem.
The federal government is facing calls to lower the tax on cigarettes to counter a black market that's operating in plain sight. Here's regional affairs reporter Jane Norman.
Australia has one of the highest tobacco excises in the world, pushing the price of a packet of cigarettes above $50. Illegally imported and untaxed cigarettes are now widely available and sell for about half that price. Federal Coalition MP Warren Entsch says the high prices are pushing smokers to the black market and wants the government to reconsider its approach to the tax.
Reducing it back to a point where people will actually go to legitimate traders.
His coalition colleague Lou O'Brien backs the call, but it's controversial. Smoking is the leading cause of preventable illness and death in Australia, and the Cancer Council says the high price of cigarettes is still the single biggest reason why people quit.
Qantas says it does not expect any impact on travel as line maintenance engineers take industrial action today, calling for better pay. Digby Worth-Muller reports.
600 Qantas line maintenance engineers will walk off the job today. The industrial action is set to take place during peak travel times for 2 4-hour stoppages across airports, including Sydney and several other Australian cities. In a statement, Qantas said it had contingencies in place and expects there to be no impact to travellers. Workers and their unions are also planning to be present at this year's annual Qantas AGM in Hobart later this morning, where salaries of the national carrier's executives will be decided on.
It's election eve in Queensland, with the state's political leaders making their final pitch for votes. Alex Brewster reports.
Labor has revealed the cost of its pre-election commitments totals almost $10 billion, funded through additional borrowing. That includes cost of living measures like 50-cent public transport fares and free lunches for state school primary students. The LNP would spend $7.1 billion without any borrowing. It would create a new department designed to rein in what it says is an over-reliance on private consultants, saving Queensland almost $7 billion. Around a third of eligible voters have already cast their ballots.
King Charles will today officially open the final sessions of the Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting in Samoa. Foreign Affairs reporter Stephen Jedgetts is in the capital, Apia.
King Charles will deliver an opening address at the beginning of the meeting of leaders from 56 countries, including Prime Minister Anthony Albanese. The King has a long record as an advocate for action on climate change, and the climate threats faced by developing nations across the Commonwealth are expected to remain sharply in focus in the final days of the gathering. Leaders are also expected to elect a new Secretary General of the Commonwealth to replace Patricia Scotland late on Friday.
You are listening to the latest ABC News. For more news at any time, you can download the ABC Listen app. Weeks of secretive military and technology sharing exercises involving AUKUS partners have wrapped up in New South Wales, with officials flagging Japan's future involvement. Here's Defence correspondent Andrew Green.
During Exercise Autonomous Warrior, Australia, the US and UK militaries have tested their ability to jointly operate cutting-edge unmanned maritime systems while sharing and processing data between all three AUKUS partners. The exercises and experiments have taken place around Jervis Bay on the New South Wales south coast over the past 3 weeks, with Japanese officials invited to observe. Pentagon representatives say planning is underway to invite Japan to participate next time.
Kamala Harris will hold a star-studded rally in Georgia later today as the US presidential campaign enters its final days. North America correspondent Barbara Miller reports from Atlanta.
Former President Barack Obama will join the vice president at the rally outside Atlanta, as well as rock legend Bruce Springsteen. It's also being widely reported that Beyoncé is due to appear at an event tomorrow with Kamala Harris, though the vice president hasn't yet confirmed this.
I have nothing to report at this moment. Stay tuned, however.
Donald Trump's campaigning in Arizona and Nevada. In a radio interview, the former president says if elected, he'll immediately fire the special prosecutor, Jack Smith. Barbara Miller, ABC News, Atlanta, Georgia.
British baby killer Lucy Letby has lost a bid to appeal her latest attempted murder conviction. Bridget Rollison reports from London.
34-year-old Lucy Letby has been found guilty of murdering 7 babies and attempting to murder 6 more at a UK hospital between 2015 and 2016. Letby's lawyers asked 3 judges to allow her to appeal her most recent conviction for attempting to kill a newborn baby girl. They argued that her trial was unfair because the jury were prejudiced by emotive media coverage. A separate public inquiry into how the former nurse was able to commit her crimes continues.
A leading youth homelessness service in Victoria says it's struggling to keep up with a dramatic surge in demand. Youth Project's annual report says its health service and drop-in centre supported almost 20,000 people this year, 56% more than the year before. It says the 19 to 25-year-old group saw the largest increase in support, with presentations in that group rising 139%. Youth Project's chair, Melanie Raymond, says it shows the homelessness crisis is affecting a wider age bracket.
People who are homeless are now homeless younger than ever before, and that they are going to be homeless longer than ever before, and that their health is deteriorating.
A prepare-to-leave warning has been issued for a bushfire burning near Cloncurry in outback Queensland. Authorities say a large, fast-moving fire is burning near Selwyn Range and travelling towards Cloncurry. A watch and act warning extends from Powerhouse Road to the Flinders Highway and round Oak Road. The Queensland Fire Department is warning conditions could worsen quickly. With sport now, here's Jared Coote.
Hawthorn has beaten Melbourne by 6 points in the AFLW competition in Cairns. Hawks skipper Emily Bates was a standout, finishing with 20 disposals in the 3-5-23-2-5-17 victory. The win moves Hawthorn to the top of the ladder with 9 wins and 1 loss, while Melbourne is ninth. Melbourne United has beaten the Illawarra Hawks 92-87 in the National Basketball League in Wollongong. United star Chris Golding finished with a game-high 25 points on his 36th birthday. Hawks coach Justin Tatum was hit with a technical foul in the match for abusing a referee. Speaking after the match, Tatum says NBL referees treat him more harshly than his coaching rivals.
I'm intimidated. I guess my voice too deep. I'm too tall. My skin color is different. Whatever it is, it's me. You know, because I hear the same coaches say similar to same things or complain about the same stuff, and their lead way, their leash is a little bit longer. But I guess I have to be made an example out of.
And England's men's test cricket team has posted 267 in its first innings against Pakistan in the series deciding third test. In response, the hosts are 3 for 73.
To finance, Wall Street stocks are mostly higher, driven by a positive earnings outlook from Tesla. That's pushed the tech-heavy Nasdaq 0.8% higher. The broad S&P 500 is up by 0.25%. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is 0.33% lower. The Australian share market is set to open 0.1% higher later this morning. The Australian dollar is higher at 66.4 US cents. Oil is lower. Brent crude trading at $74.50 US a barrel.
Across Australia, you're listening to Breakfast on ABC Radio National.
Good morning and welcome to AM. I'm Sally Sara in Canberra, coming to you from Ngunnawal country and acknowledging other custodians. Queensland's political leaders have made their final pitches to voters, blitzing through electorates across the state as they wrap up the campaign. Polling suggests the Liberal National Party will form government after almost a decade in opposition. Stephanie Smale reports.
In the beachside suburb of Redcliffe, north of Brisbane, locals are basking in the sun and talking politics.
I'm going for poor Stephen Miles's opposition. So he was on the card, but I didn't vote for him. Poor fella.
Some locals here will be voting in the Premier Stephen Miles's electorate and some in the retiring Attorney General Yvette Darbs. But they share similar concerns to voters right across the state.
Cooning, people being awoken in the middle of the night.
Have you experienced crime personally?
No, I haven't. But I don't want to. I have a very elderly husband and me. I don't want to experience crime.
Others say housing and homelessness are the biggest problems here.
Rent is extremely high in this area, extremely high.
Labor holds the former Attorney General's seat by just over 6%, making it one of a long list of electorates in Queensland they'll be fighting to keep.
A lot of the people are seeing some of the free things like lunches and electricity as a bit of a carrot, but very close all the same.
But the issue of abortion isn't likely to hurt Labor's chances here, with voters worried about how the LNP would handle it, despite leader David Crisafulli saying this week he believes in a woman's right to choose.
My husband and I are incensed that it has come up. It's 2024, come on.
Hoppa!
The major party leaders are crisscrossing the state as the campaign wraps up. The Liberal National Party leader David Crisafulli on what he's calling a fresh start blitz.
We have shown Queenslanders why they need a fresh start, and on Saturday they get a chance to vote for that fresh start. Labor's approach is not good enough, and enough is enough.
The Premier Stephen Miles is reminding voters about his cost of living payouts.
All of those things will support Queenslanders with the cost of living forever.
And he's posed more questions about how the Liberal National Party will deliver their promises.
It's maths. If you want to spend less, have less income, have lower debt and spend more, then you have to cut. That's the only way you can do it.
Political analyst Paul Williams says polling indicates the predicted Labor wipeout won't happen, but it's likely the Liberal National Party will form government with a slim majority.
It might mean they just limp over the line just with one or two or three seat majority and not the big landslide that everyone was expecting.
More than 1.2 million Queenslanders have already cast their votes ahead of Election Day.
That's Stephanie Smale reporting. Kamala Harris is set to hold a star-studded rally near Atlanta as the race for the White House enters its final stretch. The Vice President and her opponent, the Republican candidate Donald Trump, are targeting key battlegrounds. North America correspondent Barbara Miller joined me a short time ago from Atlanta in the swing state of Georgia. Barbara, good morning. It looks like the big-name stars are coming out now.
That's right. I mean, we saw Eminem on the stage with Barack Obama earlier in the week supporting the Kamala Harris campaign. Today here in just outside Atlanta in Georgia, we're going to see the former President Obama again on stage with Kamala Harris and the rock star Bruce Springsteen, which I was pretty excited about. But Since then, since that announcement, there's been an announcement that Beyoncé will perhaps be headlining with Kamala Harris tomorrow in Texas. So certainly we're seeing the Democrats really bring out their star power for the final days of this campaign, trying to just get all the attention they can. I spoke to a couple of people flooding into the rally here near Atlanta, and I asked them, out of those three, Kamala Harris, Barack Obama, Bruce Springsteen, who they were most excited to see.
I have to go with Obama. I feel like he's, you know, the one that got away as far as I've never got the chance to see him live, so I'm excited for that.
Barack and Kamala.
We hear that support amongst black voters might be down a little bit for Kamala Harris compared to what Joe Biden got. Is that troubling you?
No, and that's a lie. So don't believe the noise. That's fake news. Black people have always historically voted, especially black women. So the narrative that the news media is trying to put out about black voters, they can stop that lie here in Georgia. This is the state of the past oppressors. And the ancestors will not allow us to sit at home and lag behind.
That's some voters there just outside Atlanta in Georgia. And Barbara Miller, what is Donald Trump doing on the campaign trail today?
Well, he's also hitting the swing states, Georgia, of course, a key swing state. He'll be in Arizona and Nevada today, another two crucial battlegrounds. On that issue of the stars supporting the Democrats, his campaign dismisses that as proof that Kamala Harris is from a party of the elite. So they certainly try and hose down this sense that a lot of these big names in music are coming out in support of the Democrats. We also heard from Donald Trump in a radio interview he did, and in that he said that if he's re-elected, he will, within a couple of seconds, he said, fire the special prosecutor Jack Smith. Now, Jack Smith's the man who's brought two federal cases against Donald Trump, and Donald Trump again giving us a taste of what he perhaps might do if and when he's elected in the election, which is really just in just about a week and a half's time now. So both campaigns making sure to stay in the headlines today as we really get into just the final days and hours of this campaign.
That's our correspondent Barbara Miller in Atlanta in the swing state of Georgia. You're listening to AM where it's 16 past 7, and for more news you can download the ABC Listen app. Two federal coalition MPs are breaking a long-standing bipartisan approach to tobacco policy, calling on the federal government to lower the tax on cigarettes. They argue the tax is now so high it's fueling a black market that's operating in plain sight and robbing taxpayers of billions of dollars in revenue. Here's National Regional Affairs reporter Jane Norman.
Strolling through the streets of Cairns in North Queensland, the local Liberal member Warren Ench is getting increasingly frustrated at what he sees.
The number of tobacconists that have opened up in Cairns, these shop fronts that have opened up in the last couple of years, it blows your mind.
Many are selling under-the-counter cigarettes, which are being imported in vast quantities and sold for about half the price of the legal ones. While the states are moving to tighten retail regulations, the problem has become so big that Mr. Ench says it's time to consider a drastic measure, lowering the tobacco tax.
Reducing it back to a point where people will actually go to legitimate traders.
Australia has one of the highest tobacco taxes in the world. A pack of cigarettes now costs about $50, and of that, the tax is worth about $33. Nationals MP Lou O'Brien says while well-intentioned, he thinks the tax has had the unintended consequence of fueling a black market.
My view, and whilst this is unpalatable, I think we need to direct people back to the regulated market. If that means reducing excise, I think that's a sensible thing to do.
Both major parties have used steep increases in the excise as a tool to help drive down smoking rates while also boosting the budget bottom line. But despite these big tax increases, the revenue collected has plunged, down from a peak of $16 billion 4 years ago to $9.8 billion last year, well short of Treasury's forecast. Economist Chris Richardson says it suggests a growing number of smokers are shifting to the black market.
reading backwards from the official numbers, this would say that the use of illegal tobacco in Australia has absolutely roared in the last handful of years.
The Albanese government is increasing the excise on top of the regular indexation for 3 years as part of a broader strategy to lower smoking rates from around 10% today to 5% by 2030. It's a highly contentious issue. Smoking is the leading cause of preventable illness and death in Australia, and the Cancer Council says the high price of cigarettes is still the single biggest reason why people quit. Terry Slevin from the Public Health Association of Australia says it also helps stop people taking up the habit.
It's a major disincentive for young people starting to smoke. So this increase in excise strategy, which has been a bipartisan policy, it's been a very important and successful strategy in tobacco control in Australia for some decades.
It's Terry Slevin there from the Public Health Association, ending that report from Jane Norman. The Northern Territory is the latest jurisdiction to make boasting about breaking the law on social media a criminal offence. The NT government says the post and boast law will make the community safer. But some criminologists say it won't make much of a difference at all, and other preventative steps would be more effective. Jane Barden reports.
In videos like this, young offenders film themselves stealing cars and attacking people for social media. It's led to calls for a new law criminalising posting and boasting. NT Police Assistant Commissioner Janelle Tonkin.
We do see these incidents being broadcast on social media. That only heightens the risk of the behaviour because you start to see others copying the behaviour.
The NT government has responded. Last week it made posting and boasting about committing crimes online an offence with a maximum 2-year prison penalty. It's followed the lead of New South Wales and Queensland, NT Chief Minister Leah Fenocchiaro.
What this is designed to target is people trying to be a hero and glorifying the crimes that they've committed. They're not only about meeting community expectation, but acting as a strong deterrent to stop would-be criminals from doing the crime in the first place.
But Deakin University senior criminology lecturer Mark Wood says there's not enough evidence such laws reduce youth crime.
If the goal is deterrence, most of the behaviours that they're bragging about online already carry more severe penalties than these new laws. So adding another offence isn't likely to change their behaviour.
He says there are more effective preventative measures, such as more family support and offender rehabilitation programmes.
Addressing the root causes, childhood trauma and adverse circumstances and a lack of support.
Among Darwin young people and their parents, there are mixed views about whether the laws are needed.
Some of the kids in my class steal stuff, and because they post it, other people think it's cool, and so it's become a thing.
I think the kids that are going to be influenced by those sorts of videos are already more likely to commit those sorts of crimes anyway.
Leah Fenocchiaro says she's ready to be judged on her government's results.
We will reduce crime and restore our lifestyle, and in 4 years' time, I encourage every Territorian to judge us on our actions.
How quickly could we expect in the community that crime will start to be lowered?
Well, there are publicly available crime statistics. People will be able to check the crime data over the next 4 years of my government. My government understands very clearly that there is much more work that needs to be done.
That's Leah Fenocchiaro there, the NT Chief Minister, ending that report from Jane Barden and Lillian Rangier. Australia's Indigenous tourism sector is on the rise, offering visitors a unique window into one of the world's oldest living cultures. But despite a surge in interest, industry leaders say the sector is being overlooked, costing the economy millions in untapped potential. A parliamentary inquiry has recommended sweeping reforms to help strengthen the industry, as national tourism reporter Christy Sexton-McGrath reports.
In the heart of Far North Queensland, where the rainforest meets the reef, a new wave of Indigenous tourism is offering visitors a unique glimpse into one of the world's oldest living cultures.
This is a safe space for you guys to ask any questions at all that you would like to know about Indigenous culture and lifestyle.
Joanne Mundraby is an Indigenous lead tour guide for Mundingalpi Authentic Indigenous Tours in Cairns and is taking tourists on a short boat ride across Trinity Inlet.
There's no question that we're going to find silly or offensive. We want you to ask those questions because we believe that you taking the time out to ask, to understand, and that's reconciliation in action. It brings us closer together.
After leaving the boat, visitors are led on a bush tour where they learn about practices like bush medicine and how the local Indigenous community lived off the land for thousands of years. Beverly Milo from Florida in the United States is one of a dozen North Americans on the tour.
You don't experience things like this in your own country, and to come to a country you've never been to and to meet the First People is fascinating. And their customs and their ways.
Indigenous tourism experiences like these are gaining global recognition. A Tourism Research Australia report shows more international visitors are seeking out Indigenous experiences, 15% last year, up from 11% in 2019. But despite the growing demand, the sector remains undervalued. Professor Lisa Brehannon is an expert in tourism at the University of Queensland.
It really is our key cultural product. This is our point of differentiation to other parts of the world. I think it has been undervalued in over time by the broader industry. It's always been seen more of a niche sector.
A parliamentary inquiry recently recommended the creation of a national First Nations tourism body to address these challenges. The new body would be based on the Western Australian Indigenous Tourism Operators Council. Here's CEO Robert Taylor.
WATOC works on a lot of development across WA, so developing the Aboriginal tourism sector so it's ready for the international market is one of the things it can learn as a national body gets set up.
In a statement, Tourism Australia said the organisation was at the forefront of promoting and developing First Nations tourism and that they were working on a whole-of-government response to the report's findings. Dale Mundraby from Mandingalpai Authentic Indigenous Tours says it's important Indigenous tourism is supported through a national body.
The foundation of this is around providing employment that'll create change through the opportunity and ultimately disrupt the welfare cycle by creating employment and having a social change within our community.
It's Dale Mundraby ending that report from Christy Sexton McGrath. Arm wrestling has a reputation of being a traditionally blokey sport where competitors go arm to arm in a showdown of strength. But in Melbourne, women are part of a club that's shattering stereotypes in preparation for the national arm wrestling titles. Reporter Lexi Junowick muscled in on a training session at what's known as the House of Pain.
It's a Wednesday night in Melbourne, and inside the small front office of a working meat factory, an unusual cohort has gathered. A new mother, disability support worker, and Tyler are among a crowd of at least 20, all here to battle. Each week, this arm wrestling club, dubbed the House of Pain, dust up, grip up and leave it all behind on specially built wrestling tables. While the majority of club members here are men, Celine Vanos, the Victorian State Director of the Australian Arm Wrestling Federation, says there's been a big jump in female participation since she discovered the sport 8 years ago.
My first competition that I competed at was by accident. I was going as a spectator. I was there to watch the event, and they had bought 3 medals for the 3 podium finishes for the women's class, and they only had 2 women rock up. So when I walked in, my coach, Andrew Lee, pointed me out and said, "Oh, there's our 3rd female. Celine, you're competing today." I'd never been on an arm wrestling table before. I barely knew anything about the sport.
Ms. Vanos says there are now at least 50 women nationwide who regularly train and compete at arm wrestling events.
From the outside, it looks like a very typical strength-based sport, a very masculine strength-based sport. But then once you're introduced to the technical side of the sport and how many different ways there are to leverage your strength against your opponents and use what strength you have and be a bit more technical about it, that's what really fascinated me.
Andrew Lee founded the House of Pain in 2012 and says getting women involved has always been his aim.
One thing that was missing was the women in the sport. So I've always tried to encourage women to firstly come to the club.
Tell me, what's the biggest misconception do you think about what you do here?
that there's stereotypes. There is no stereotypes. It's open to absolutely anyone. Anyone can arm wrestle.
While there's definitely a social element to the weekly training night at the House of Pain, the competitive spirit is as strong as the smell of sweat in the air. Currently, members are laser-focused on the upcoming Australian arm wrestling titles. Yvonne Ritzer-Smith will be participating in left and right arm events on November 2nd.
I feel like this is my year to try and aim for first place. Like, I'm feeling good about it this year. Even, like, you know, having a baby recently, I just feel like, you know, bring my mum's strength along to just give me that little bit of edge.
Regardless of whether the club brings home trophies from nationals, Celine Vanos says comps like this are an important step in raising the profile of the sport. She's among many in the arm wrestling community that are hopeful it will be included in the 2028 Olympics program.
Something like that hasn't happened in arm wrestling to that extent, which I think would be incredible.
It's Celine Vanos there from the Australian Arm Wrestling Federation, ending that report from Lexi Junowick. In finance, Wall Street stocks have ended mixed. The Dow Jones has lost a third of 1%. The Australian dollar is higher at 66.3 US cents. And that's AM. I'm Sally Sara. It's 7:30. Good morning to Patricia Carvelis.
Good morning, Sally, and good morning to you. You're listening to ABC Radio National Breakfast. Top stories we're following this morning. The Gold Coast grandmother and volunteer aid worker who witnessed the killing of her 26-year-old colleague in Gaza is the star witness at an international investigation into the killing. She joins me in a moment. And later this morning, a Labor elder says the party has lost touch with its blue-collar base. Former Senator Kim Carr has written a book about it, and he joins me after 8 o'clock this morning. First, Luke Sydam-Dundon is here with an update of the news headlines at 7:30.
Morning, PK. News this hour, the Commonwealth Secretary-General says slavery reparations are not on the formal agenda at this week's Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting in Samoa. Commonwealth leaders had been reportedly planning to raise reparations for transatlantic slavery, something the British Prime Minister Keir Starmer doesn't want on the table. Our interview with Patricia Scotland is on the ABC list. Snap. In other news, hundreds of Qantas employees will walk off the job this morning as workers call for fairer pay conditions. Around 600 line maintenance engineers will strike for 2 4-hour stoppages at all major Australian airports. Qantas isn't expecting the action to impact services. The workers are calling for a 45% pay increase after the airline failed to increase their wages over the last 4 years. And lastly, after weeks of campaigning and 2 weeks of early polling, there's just one full day of campaigning left in the Queensland election. Both major parties have revealed the cost of their policy commitments, Labor needing additional borrowings to fund its pledges, while the LNP